434-1, that's 790 Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon, sir.
How are you, sir?
Hey, all right. How are you?
It's an old hotel worker like you.
Okay.
A retired hotel worker.
Yes, sir.
Right. I want to take you back. I want to take you back to one of the earlier subjects that you had about the subject of culture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a part of our culture that Gary did not put in his song. Now, when we were talking about naming the bus terminal,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, let me say something. When we wanted to name a part of the fish market, who we looked to name it after? Not a fish vendor?
Yes.
Okay. So why should we, if we want to name the bus terminal, why should we not name it after a part of our culture that was more involved in the bus terminal? What about the Knot Sellers? Do they have any old Knot Sellers that we can, the historians can go back and say that this body was one of the early Knot Sellers?
The Knot Seller was immortalized in song by Emile Straker, but I know people. So let me ask you this question. How many young Barbadians do they know what Knot Seller is, though? I listen to the song all the time, right? And I listen to sometimes young, you know, school children when they perform and things doing the Knot Seller. I just chuckle because I don't think they have. I agree with you, you know. I know nuts and ice flask with ice blocks in it by I could tell you of some young gentlemen who are today respectable members of the society, who once got old lady to open the flask, pretending to want to buy ice blocks and drop a bandit in it and blow up the ice flask and run away. They should be arrested and flogged in the middle of Independence Square. But anyhow, they got away with it. But yeah, I don't think they know the names of any of them.
But I think any historians do research that there
was. I'm sure there were people who know. Some still alive.
I could give you the name of one. I could give you the name of
related
one.
Related to you? Whom?
Yeah, she's related to me, yeah.
Okay.
She was related to me.
I figured that's why you would remember. And her name was?
Well, I read with some. Well, I guess it's not my one.
Well,
I guess they have other people that would know. If historians check with people. Somebody with no other
Knot Sellers.
That was a part of our culture. And that was
it was
in the bus time with the old buses.
Lined up one next to the other. Yep.
Right. I don't think that the name Granville Williams is more fitting than one of those Knot Sellers.
Listen,
that is a weird religious thing.
But sir, right? We like naming streets after people, right?
Right.
Elan Grove was the romantic attachment to Elan Grove.
Right,
fix the road. Fix the road from the corner right through past the cathedral, heading all back out that bumpy and rocky. Give it a nice sidewalk on both sides, you know. Make it look pretty and call it Granville Williams Boulevard.
Right. I agree with
Drive
that.
Something.
Right. Yeah, you know. Okay, another subject I want to talk to you about, though. I'm going to education, though. Now, one of the problems that I got, and I believe that the children get to,
mm-hmm.
because it's mostly the parents. Everybody, this 11 plus, everybody, don't care how bad people may think they are, everybody want their children to go to these elite schools, and everybody want their children to get enough certificates and become doctor and lawyer and all that sort of thing. I was speaking to a lady one time, not too long ago. Now, her daughter passed for a certain school. But she wanted the girl to go to a bigger school. And she didn't get through. But the girl is interested in styles and hair doing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I tell her, listen, if a child is interested in something, you know, she could become a world-class hair stylist or fashion designer or something.
Correct.
I have a friend right now who lives in Canada. He was going to school at Christchurch High School at that time. His mother used to pat rocks at him to go to school. Right, there he come. And you know all this boy was walking about with is a box guitar in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he come in the golf library and trained all of us, a lot of our barbers, entertainers, all of us to learn play guitar and everything. And you know that he went on ship and all sort of thing. And this boy ended up going to Canada and playing in the survey, I think, and come back here and buy a house for his mother.
Yes, could be done. When you look internationally, right? What's make the most money internationally?
Right.
Entertainers and sportsmen.
And sportsmen, right.
But entertainers and sportsmen.
Right. I believe...
Got them in Barbados?
Right, no. But when I try to enter something, I mean, you got to help each child in that area.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to force a child to become a doctor when you want to be a chef. And then you go and cut off a patient's head or something.
Look, you know, so this thing about parents and their expectations of children, it's overblown, I think. No, we're working it into the ground.
I have a granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
No, her mother went to school at St. Michael and her father went to Queen's College. And this girl is very bright. But you know, she told me she ain't interested in the lottery. She ain't even interested in the exam then. I asked her what she wanted to do when she came. But she told me she wanted to be a chef.
Mm-hmm.
I tell she mother, if she wanted to be a chef, try to make sure you help her.
She
got
some training. Yeah.
Because she could become a world-class executive chef. Right?
And Barbados need... So, look, let me tell you why I don't knock those people who want to pursue certain professions. That's their choice. But when you pick up the newspaper on a daily basis and you see that Barbados, somebody in Barbados or somebody's in Barbados, hotels, asking for a grass superintendent, what does a grass superintendent do? Do we know?
We don't even know.
Do we want to train them in Barbados? When we look and we see we need executive chefs, we've seen those. Right. And we pay no attention to it. We say, we have a lot of local ones now. And then we look and we see we want a teacher to teach physical education. Mm-hmm. We want a teacher to teach history. We want a teacher to teach electronics. We want a teacher to teach IT. We need to bring in somebody to be an audit specialist. We need to get a work permit. So every day in the newspaper, I am seeing more and more people asking for work permits, some positions that I ask myself, are we training our people for the wrong thing? Or what is we doing that's right? Or what is we doing that's wrong? When I look and I read over the same period with this CXC tralala, when I see that Ghana have students that have 18 ones, I ask, what is that child going to do with 18 distinctions in every subject under the sun? What do they want to do? I mean, 18 distinctions, I ask myself, why? Now, there may be a good reason why, but I don't know it when I look at it. You talk about someone who pick up a box guitar.
Right.
They're people who learn from looking.
Right.
I saw a little Chinese guy take up his mother's phone in a Chinese restaurant and started moving his fingers around the phone. And I asked the mother, who could barely speak English, what he was doing. She said, password. He looks at my hand moving up and down and guess password.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a little guy that's about 4 years old, you know.
Okay.
Who knows that by picking up his cell phone and moving his finger along in a manner that he sees his mother moving, he will have access to the phone. Now,
right.
He does not know what her password is, but you won't bet he find it out sooner or later.
Oh, yeah.
From looking at her moving a finger on the face of a telephone. So if you see a child who obviously has an aptitude for doing something, yes, you want them to do something else, but encourage them to do what they're doing. Because that would be a channel to, you know, gain them to do other things.
And but, they can do all too.
But so they could do it. I mean, you got people like Roger Gittins working with the young students at community college in music. I mean, a lot of very talented young musicians, saxophonists, Maxi Baldeo's daughter Mistral, who used to play pan. You know, I asked her what happened to it once, and she told me, I give it up. And it hurts because obviously there was a passion there.
Right, right.
And to me, when we kill our children's passion and force them to do what we want them to do,
right,
we lose them.
Yeah,
so if they want to paint, paint. They want to draw, draw. They want to fix cars, fix cars. Yes, you got to learn how to add and multiply and subtract because want to charge a man $500 and he give you $200 and you don't know the difference.
Right. You learn basic.
Exactly, yeah. You know, you got to know, right? And if you got to write overseas to get parts sent to you, you got to know how to write, okay? You got to know how to deal with what you want to do. But don't stifle it for no reason at all.
This same guy, he owns his own band. You could go on YouTube and find him now. He owns a band up there with white fellas and buck up all over the place. So you see, that was his passion.
Yep.
That was his passion. You know what I'm saying? So thank you, Mr. Johnson. Thank you for listening.
Thank you as well for sharing with us. Absolutely. Brass Dax, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, my brother.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm trying to be good.
Let me just paint the front of the guy on the last point. There was a man who owned a place called FedEx. The story of that was when he wrote his thesis on that he was going to move mail all over the world, he got a failing grade. He got a failing grade. But you know, he's a multi-billionaire now.
Listen, I always ask this question, right? You know a toothpick?
Yeah.
What do you think they tell the man who say, I can invent a piece of stick that cut one end and curve the other end and people can buy it to clean their teeth? I sure they laugh like it. I keep looking at a toothpick and wondering, who decided to invent this? The man had to be crazy. We're still buying it, though. We're buying it in plastic. We're buying it in wood. We're buying it in pretty colors.
Yeah.
A toothpick. I keep going, who come up with this idea? This man is a nutcake.
Lady. I've got a few questions.
Uh-huh.
First of all, you know, we spoke some time ago about Heroes Square, how it was really a disgrace. I think that I'm going to be devil's advocate. I agree with you that we could put up something like with all the names on it, because you have all national, you have a few national heroes already who have their monuments all over the place, and it would not be so good to just put one hero in the hero square. That don't think that would make a lot of sense. But unless you put all the heroes, I know that you can have a situation where you have a case that you can look into this thing or a tablet, like a piece of marble or something like that, so you can move from place to place. You can have a brief history of the hero and the picture you said about, or not the whole thing that you sent it off. No, I'm going to be devil's advocate.
All right.
The taxi stand needs to remove from the hero square.
Can't disagree with you.
needs.
I can't disagree with you.
You can guess the last.
But
don't worry about it.
No, sir. I think, and this is a serious. So this is a serious statement, right? I think we, and perhaps the taxi drivers are also partly responsible. I have some friends who work at that location and work at the lower end too, who may hit my back rather than shove me away when I pass. But I think we undersell ourselves because they're there. They have no facilities to wash their hands or go to the bathroom that I know of, unless they go to Chafet or one of the places around and ask for a little excuse, please. I think we need to treat our taxi men with a little more dignity. Yes. And they need to ask that they are treated with a little more dignity, the same way we have a bus stand. Why not a proper taxi stand somewhere in the city our taxis can be parked? And people can go there and they can have a restroom, facilities that they keep clean. And even if their passengers need a little assistance with something, a child that needs their diaper changed, something like that. We're a progressive society. Let's build a progressive city.
What's
wrong with that?
Nothing at all. The next question I have for you is this whole question of the children and things like that. One has recognized that the days have changed tremendously. When probably I was growing up, I had a great grandmother and a grandmother. and they used to look after me, make sure that
auntie,
I had
an auntie who had no children too.
That's right.
They used to take care of every stray.
I had to go to church.
Yeah.
So there was a completely different dynamic. And even though in those days children had children, it was completely different from children having children today, because they had the extended family of those grandmothers and great grandmothers who used to look after them and make sure you have to go to school, you have to go to church.
Correct.
Right.
So, if you could do neither, somebody taught you to do something.
Yes, the grandmothers don't have children. So it becomes,
at 35.
The dynamic is a lot harder. I don't talk about that. Somebody said, well, get back to church. Yeah, but every person go to church, or you can get the youngsters to go to church. That's a difficult one. The other one I want to know from you quickly, because I know the time might be running out on me, your definition for culture. And the reason why you ask this is, we refer to the minibus as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think I refer to the minibus as bad behavior and lawlessness. I don't know if bad behavior and lawlessness is a culture.
It's an expression. Culture is an expression of who and what you are. That is why the minibus thing is called a culture, because it is an expression. Remember the guy say it's for a certain type of person? It's an extension. Listen, I keep saying this, right? When you look at what takes place on minibus, it is not about the minibus alone, you know. It's about the hair, it's about the nails, it's about the fet, it's about what you wear to go to the fet, it's about who you go to the fet with, it's about what you do while you're at the fet. That's why it's called a culture, because it's an expression. There is a reason why the music is played on the bus, and in between their shout-outs to particular DJs, information about fet. It's an advertisement for a lifestyle. And that is why it's a culture, sir. It's an expression of who or what you are. And that's why I call it a culture, but that's why, too, I have always been a supporter of letting the buses paint themselves the way they want to be painted, because they'll be identified as what they are. When it was called Midnight Assassin, you know why it was called that way. But we thought by painting them all in the same color, we would get rid of the culture. It has not changed. What they've done is they've moved the expression of culture somewhere else. So now it's painted inside the bus. It's painted on the mudguard. Is the piece of cloth hanging from the muffler, or the black flag that goes up on the pole on the antenna when one of the bad boys dead. So that is how it has become expressed. You see, if we did not try to stifle artistic expression, we would then tell our school children to paint your school bus in the colors of your school, in the way your art class in the school design it, so that the bus at St. Michael's School will represent the St. Michael art class expression in 2020. Because we have artistic people in there. And the one going to community college will play the music that the teachers at community college training the students in there to play. Because that's an expression of what community college is. And the UE bus will look like the UE Eagles, or whatever is the name of the football team, or the netball team, or the whatever team they have there. So, I mean, why are we afraid of artistic expression? We put a mural at the NCF. We took it down. We put up another one. We have a postage stamp on the post office. And it was done by Barbadian artists. Why the transport bus must look so
I've got that mural down there. I must beg up my nieces who are artists. Really call who went on there and did the Haitians to get
big
that
them
mural.
Up. Because I
big
agree.
Them up.
Why must our fish stall and our vendors market not look like a Barbadian designed it? Why?
That's our challenge. We try to pull things on the north.
We don't like a chattel house.
Quite rightly you said this morning, we don't like chattel house anymore. You said quite rightly this morning that, you know,
we are Pelican Village and nobody has want to go there. I tell them already, turn it into a brothel. Or casino, dark, the glass dark already.
Because I suppose it's the North American type of living and the North American culture, you call it. But having this CNN and all the various other channels that I can go and watch.
That the fellas say we're shoving down the throat, yeah.
I think you made a very good point on the YouTube thing. How you know that is right. You know, those kind of things, I think people take a lot of things for granted without really looking into to all the aspects of what they're talking about.
So here's how we degrade ourselves, eh? And this is where I take licks for us. When we get British commentators and Australian commentators of our cricket saying, oh, that's Calypso cricket, and we think it's some kind of slur. No, we tell them Calypso cricket is who we are. How we just play the shot. We just put our foot down the track, we just look at it, and we just hit it over the fence. You call it swiping, we call it Calypso. We got rhythm. You dancing to classical, and we dancing to Calypso. And that's why you can't get we out, because we foot moving too fast. We women boxy as sway. You just have to make your white people models walk with one leg in front of the other to make them look like they got hips and butt. And then go by the doctor and ask him to put on one. And the legs narrow and can't carry it. So, I don't understand why we are ashamed of who we are.
Who we are, that's right. We are ashamed of who we are.
You know, people look, there was a guy, may he rest in peace, who used to call in and say, oh, Mother Sally is so, you know, bad. This big boxy and big breast woman. But that's who we are. And the point is, it was based on a lady that came out of Africa, which was a sign of fertility. It's not about mocking people boxing and working up.
Nope.
Know the history, and then you'll know why you do what you do. When I read people talking about, oh, they play Calypso cricket because they collapse 41 all out, I just hold my head in shame. Because that's not Calypso cricket. That's trying to play like them.
That's right. Most of them are trying to play them.
That ain't not how we learn to play cricket on the beach and on the road and, you know, on the grass patch.
The only thing about was if you get some bat and put up three bottles or something like that, you're all clear.
Listen, I went by in front of the same place they put Nelson's statue. Block A, the garrison, and look at the patch of grass there with a tree growing on it, and ask myself, how the hell we used to play cricket here, though? But we used to play cricket there. We used to have men feeling all about the place.
Right.
And I stand on that patch of grass today, and I look at it, and I go, this place shrink, right?
I remember my good friend.
That's where we used to play cricket.
There used to play cricket beside the house, and he couldn't hit the ball.
Couldn't hit the house.
It would got in somebody's yard, you would never get back the ball.
And never get back the ball. And under that, you get your bat confiscated and you get beat too. Listen, let me tell you the one that I always tell people. Eh? You know when you don't know what you're doing and you feel you know what you're doing? I remember going on Accra Beach, right? Rockley Beach. And seeing this big fella, he looked fat to me, bowling. And I say, oh, this fat man bowling at anybody. When I get a bat, you're going to see. And you know when the water just start go off and the table hit the water and they fly?
Man, drop
one of them, listen, and drop me alongside my head. And I sure I see stars and hear birds tweeting. So when they revive me, when they pick me up out of the water, I ask, who's that fat fella? Tell me, oh, he named Wayne Daniel. You ever hear the name Wayne Daniel play cricket in Barbados? I come on the beach and feel like I could play. Hit Wayne Daniel. I get hit so hard with a tape ball. I didn't think I ever pick up a bat after that. So look, Malcolm Marshall used to play road tennis. That's how he used to keep fit. And Malcolm Marshall was, you know, I mean, a wizard with a ball in his hand at cricket. I think he's a genius. You know, and we don't tell our youngsters to follow that line. And then we don't understand why they don't understand the psychology of the game. And we just get psyched out all the time.
Yeah. All right, before I go, let me say this one. You don't have to have a statue. You don't have to remove a statue and replace it with a statue.
I agree.
You don't have to do that. All you need to do is to have some nice gardens and some, and forget about the things on the treasury building and let us develop that area in an area which becomes a tourist attraction as well as a national attraction, because we want to sit down and relax and reminisce.
I agree with you, sir.
That's what it should be. No more statue what. I like your idea of putting up some like the cenotaph so we can have all the names listed there. And instead of and put your other heroes wherever you want, put them across the country.
And you could do an island tour, heroes. Tour the heroes from here to there to everywhere. Send your tourists on a scavenger hunt, a treasure hunt. Bring back the names and the inscriptions on all our national heroes. And you get a free dinner at Sandy Lane by the pool. 4341790. To those who were offended by my reference to persons placing their heels in front of their toes because they don't have the hips and the wide bottoms that used to characterize women of color, and considered my terminology a racial slur, I do apologize for what was perceived as a racial slur. It was not intended to be one. It was meant to be a distinction between the characteristics of various racial types. Brass Dax, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hello.
Good afternoon to you and to the listeners.
To you too, sir.
Now, I have been wondering for a long time. I'm putting a lot of effort into trying to find out this question. Why is it that people behave the way they do? The same people who behave like wild animals in the bus stand will go to the bank or to the doctor's office and behave like trained personnel.
Different environment, and their respect for those institutions.
Well, of course. So it seems then that the venue where we are or the environment propels us to behave either like human beings or wild animals. And it doesn't happen with all. So there's so many complexities there that we are at a loss. Now, all of this came up in my mind after I sat and I watched yesterday's presentation regarding the taking down of the statue. As far as I am concerned, it could still be there. But it is not for me to decide how people feel about things. But I know I feel no different this morning it not being there than if it had been. Because I came along and saw that. I read the history behind it. I understood why it was there, and it doesn't bother me that it was there. But I want to understand, what is it that a couple of Sanhedrins felt so glorified, so honored, so enthused to go and watch it taken down yesterday? What have you gotten from the idea? A boost in your pride? And what? I'm not even arguing with you. I would just like you to tell me, what makes you feel so elated to know that it isn't there? It doesn't bother me. But then, that's just me. One of the things that I consider out of it that I would like to work on for me is this. We run about and talk about the children.
Unfortunately, I think we've just about run out of time on this, the Tuesday edition of Dr. Brass Dax, perhaps, so we can continue this the next time I'm on, or perhaps you can take it up with one of our other moderators during the course of the week. Let me thank technical operator, producer John Stout, for taking care of things technical. Those of you who joined us online, on the phone, and made a contribution to this, the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks, to those of you who just listened on behalf of the team of the Lion and the Cub, have a good afternoon.